1959.
Hey, Rick.
Mike, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome to podcast episode 10.
It's 1859, the podcast that's not 19 minutes long.
1859.
Shame.
Shame. Everybody feels it. Everybody knows about it. We'll be talking about it today.
All right. So we've been doing this podcast now for like 2 years, 3 years.
I think 3 years.
Years, and we only have 10 episodes.
It's pathetic.
What's
really
wrong with us?
It's pathetic.
The question that we were just discussing is whether shame and embarrassment are the same. And they're similar, but they're not the same.
Yeah, and I think what I said was that normally I seem to feel both without any reservations whatsoever, but maybe you're different.
Well, yeah, I was feeling like shame might be a larger format of embarrassment. Shame is like life-changing, whereas embarrassment is just, you know, humiliating or...
Yeah, shame is embarrassment on Ritalin.
Well, do you have a shame story or an embarrassment story? I guess we can kind of cross slightly between the two.
It might be a bit of both. But you know what, Mike? Maybe to really understand this question, we need to inaugurate a new part of the program where we ask the shrink. It's Tara Goodrich, a psychotherapist in private practice here in the Brooklyn section of New York City.
Do you want to do that again?
1859.
Tara, this is my friend Mike Hurst, who does the podcast with me.
Hi, Tara.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for doing this.
You're welcome. It's Tara.
Tara?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for doing this, Tara. We'll call you Tara from now on.
Great.
1859.
From a clinical perspective, can you tell us what shame is?
Sure. Shame and guilt were kind of first associated with Freud when he talked about the superego. Shame is really the kind of exposure of one's experience of feeling that they've done something wrong. So, and that's generally the definition. And the way shame and guilt are kind of distinguished from each other is that guilt is one's own personal sense of wrongdoing, and shame is the idea that it's being exposed to other people or the fear that other people will find out about it.
How is it different from embarrassment?
I think shame and embarrassment are quite similar, and shame is more the extreme of embarrassment, just kind of the other end of the spectrum of it being much more intense. And I think also the difference between embarrassment and shame is that embarrassment is often associated with something that isn't so secretive or so taboo or so uncomfortable that the exposure to it, the exposure of something embarrassing isn't so so vital to one's functioning. Whereas shame feels much more intense and scary.
So when I'm thinking about the fact that even though I've known you for probably 15 years, I called you Tara instead of Tara, should I think that that's embarrassment or shame?
Or should you feel guilty?
I should feel embarrassed?
That's all.
Okay, no shame then.
Slight embarrassment, although you don't usually call me that.
It's true, I'm just whatever. Do you suppose that you could tell us some really shameful things that you've heard in your practice?
I'd be too ashamed to tell you shameful things about my patients.
And why is that exactly?
No, what I can tell you generally what people feel ashamed about. I can't expose a patient's experience. People are ashamed about everything from their childhoods, their sexuality, all their vices, their dreams, relationships. Let's see, what else?
What about voting Republican? Is that something?
Yeah. Being Republican in New York City.
Yeah, that would seem pretty
incredible
shameful.
Incredible shame.
Yeah. Is that it? It seems so obvious.
That seems like everything. What did she miss?
What about, let's see, cheating on taxes?
No, I think that would not come up in a therapy session. I think people do it. I think people are just embarrassed about that.
Huh, okay.
Or have guilt.
And, Tara, I know that you happen to be skipping your Italian class so that you can do this interview with us. Are you embarrassed about that or worse?
I feel guilty about it. I don't now, but because I'm on a podcast right now and I'm on air, I think that I should feel a little bit of shame.
Huh. Okay.
I felt guilty before I started talking to you. Now I feel shameful.
And what, do you want to maybe try and say that in Italian to expiate some of your guilt?
Now that I feel incredibly ashamed about. I don't know how to say shame in Italian.
You mean your Italian's not up to saying it?
No, it's not. Although I can look it up.
Is there like a culture or a religion that has more shame or guilt? Or
I think that there's an enormous amount of shame in various different in various cultures that's more extreme. I think Catholic culture has a fair amount of shame associated with it. Oh, I looked it up. Vergogna. That's right.
That's shame in Italian?
Yes, vergogna.
Vergogna.
Let's call some other people and call them by the wrong names.
Yeah. Or Mike, maybe you can just tell us your story of
Vergogna.
Well, this story takes place when I was about 8 years old. My brother was 10, I was 8. My parents were divorced, and my mother got one of those offers to go look at a condo or something, and she would receive a free microwave oven. And she actually took up on it. You know, it was like, go look at these condos and you'll get this. You know, we needed a microwave oven. So, and it was actually, I grew up in Virginia Beach, but this was in Nag's Head. And so we drove down to Nag's Head about 2 hours, hour and a half south. And, you know, the whole thing is kind of fuzzy, but my mother basically left my brother and I to fend for ourselves in a hotel room while she went to go look at some condos so she could get a free microwave oven. So my brother and I, you know, the entire day we're running around chasing each other, beating the crap out of each other, you know, turning on the TV, jumping from bed to bed. And we'd get onto the second floor where the Galaga video game was and drop $2 of quarters in there and then run back upstairs and beat each other up some more. And then, you know, at some point, we decided we wanted to go swim in the pool. And my brother, you know, was like, let's go swim. I was like, oh, okay. And he was like, race.
Race.
And so we both, like, I think I went in the bathroom to change and he was in the main part of the hotel room changing. I must have changed more quickly than him because I opened the door and he was still changing. And, I ran out of the room as fast as I could and was jumping down the stairs, like, you know, three and four stairs at a time from the seventh floor until I got to the backyard, which had several people sitting around the pool, you know, lots of elderly folk and stuff hanging out in Nag's Head around the swimming pool. And I jumped in the pool and I was just going to pretend like I'd been there all day so that when he came down, you know, I would be like, my brother came running out the door as fast as he could, you know, a second or two later, and I was kind of still in the pool. And he was still like running, and he had a towel wrapped around his waist, and he flinged the towel off, and he had forgotten to put his swimsuit on. And he was just ass naked at the side of the pool with all these people around, and he looked down, I looked at him, and started laughing, and he ran back in, and I didn't see him for another 2 hours.
Vergogna.
Wow. So it was 2 solid hours worth of shame.
Maybe that's exaggerating, but I didn't see him for a while. The day actually got worse because even after this whole miserable event happened, a more miserable event took place, which is we were back up in the hotel room fighting once again. And like he, I forget what happened, but he like pushed me off the bed and, you know, I pushed back and then he pushed me into the little table in between the two beds, which ripped off the wall and fell on top of me and sliced open my hand and broke a finger, like all like just like that.
1859.
Mike, we're so lucky to have Eugene Merman here today, star of the small screen and, as he says, the even smaller screen.
Yes, 9:15, straight from the other end of Park Slope.
Yeah.
Thanks for showing up.
Still has a jet lag, apparently.
Yeah. Woke up at like 4 something and then went back to sleep for an hour or two.
That's what happens when you go to the global warming conference.
That's how I called it. Conference of Hot Globe.
Yeah.
Copenhagen. Yeah. Just got back from the COPE.
The COPE.
I don't think anyone calls it that.
I don't even think. I like it.
Yeah.
The COPE. So, embarrassment, humiliation,
shame.
We're here to talk about all these things.
Great.
When we decided we would invite you. For some reason.
Eugene, have you ever experienced shame?
That would be, no.
I'd ask you to
describe it for me, but I don't think I even know the words you'd use to describe it. I have. I have, I think, a pretty solid shameful story. Though I think, as I was saying, what I mostly have is a consistent level of shame that sort of permeates my life. And as a result, out of this fear of shame, I rarely get to do purely shameful things. But as a child, I really wanted a drum machine. And I think I was in eighth grade or so. And there used to be a store called Service Merchandise. I don't know. I'm sure gone now. It used to be like a chain of department stores. Oh, so good. Man, could you get a lamp there?
This was in New England somewhere?
New England. This was in Woburn, but I bet they were all over the New England area. This was in Woburn, Mass.
Wait, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Service Merchandise failed because they had a really boring name.
I think really up boring until like 86, they were kick-ass. They were like, they were probably a place where you could get a synthesizer for $10 less than Sears.
I thought you were going to say they went out of business because they had a really boring drum machine.
Well, then what's your reason for Caldor going out of business? Because that's a great name. Service Merchandise. I guess you're right. As a child, it doesn't matter. But now that I look back, I'm like, wow, you guys combined two words in a really dull way. And my guess is your business model wasn't great. But basically, they had a drum machine. I don't know how it was, but I convinced my parents to get it for me. I think I thought that if like it was like, I didn't realize you had to like hit it really hard. I thought if you like just touched it lightly, you could play the drums.
Touchpad.
I thought it would be like a touchpad that gave you rhythm. Sure. I thought it was magic. And it wasn't magic. But that's not where the real shame is, that we were there and we were waiting. And this was before Jews were brought to the front of the line. So we were waiting.
This is 1934.
I guess 88. This is probably just as Welcome to the Jungle was kind of taken over. Glam was fading and the path to Nirvana was being forged.
Right.
And I'm standing in Service Merchandise and I have to go to the bathroom very badly. Service Merchandise won't let me. And what I have to do at the time is number two. So
this is getting good already.
Yeah, yeah. So I go outside and it's a strip mall and I see a Popeyes. And I go to the Popeyes and I'm walking there and I'm like, this isn't going to be great for me.
It's
not going to be great for anybody. And then before I get to Popeyes, I start the process and then I kind of am in Popeyes, like, want to use their bathroom. And they don't want me to use their bathroom. And I'm kind of like, it's too late. I've designated your floor as my bathroom. And it was a very, very shameful thing. And then, you know, they let me into their bathroom, this tiny pooping Jew.
Vergogna.
And I think I threw up my underwear or whatever. And then I went back to Service Merchandise and I really wanted this drum machine. But my parents were like, we have to leave because you smell like shit. It was the saddest thing. We had like, because I don't know what I did to convince them that they would buy me this like $80 toy, but it was like a very rare thing that I would convince them, you know, it was probably just around Hanukkah or something, probably early. Like I was like, it can be all my 8 gifts. And
right.
And then I shit on myself and had to go home.
So that didn't convince them to buy it for you?
No, I think that maybe we went back and then I got it and then realized it was a disappointment. So it was this great thing of like shitting on myself, feeling very sad, not getting this thing, going back and then finding out this thing sucked and then returning it.
1859.
Wait, I need to know like a little backstory here, Eugene. So at what point did you realize that the calamity was imminent?
I mean, you were in the line for a long time. Did you get in the line having to go to the bathroom?
Oh, I don't know. Possibly. Probably not. I think we were waiting for like an hour. I mean, it was like... That was the only way you could buy things. I don't know what... I can't remember. I'm sure this is why they're out of business. It's true. There was a really fast wasp line now that I think about it. I probably was in line for like 30 or 40 minutes, you know, and who knows, maybe the excitement plus, you know, a mochaccino. I doubt I had a mochaccino. Caused me... I think at some point I realized I had to go to the bathroom. It looked like I would get to soon buy this thing. Then it became clear that I couldn't, but my parents could still wait there. I mean, it was long enough for me to leave, shit all over myself, throw up my underwear, like, probably cry inside, maybe outside, get back, stand, smell like shit, and then leave. So, like, this line was, like, an hour plus. But the thing is, there were probably only, like, 10, 15 people. It wasn't, like...
They all had really ridiculous requests.
It was probably before, like... Everything was on computer, so you probably had to like write out serial numbers or do who knows what to like sell things. I mean, it probably is the reason they're out of business.
I agree. I think
like there had to be something slowing them down.
The problem in the story is service merchandise.
It really is. We all have to shit once in a while, but
it's true. Otherwise, my story would be like, and then I ran into the house and shit in the bathroom, and boy, was I relieved. But instead, my story is having a disagreement with the restaurant Popeyes. Convincing them using shit as a motive.
Well, it's also good that it was Popeyes. Of all the possible franchises, somehow that one makes the story a little funnier.
Exactly. Because Burger King, who cares? But I found like the first Popeyes and shitted it. Like, that's possible. That could be the very first one.
Wait, there's a spot in the story that's full of pathos to me, which is you're in Popeyes, and instead of just going to the bathroom, like, you know, making a beeline for the bathroom, you obviously stopped and asked for permission somewhere.
It might have been locked. I mean, admittedly, it was years ago. I either asked for permission or permission needed to be granted to me. Like, maybe I tried the door and it was locked and I was like, you have to do this. And then there was a moment of like, for customers only, and then a moment of never mind.
Once again, the 1859 podcast.
Back
addresses.
In the toilet, where we belong.
Well, I mean,
at least we're analyzing. That's shameful.
Yeah, I mean, you asked me about shame. You didn't say what's a story that's not about poop, because I would have told a totally different story.
So Eugene wants to play the theremin.
Yes, but yeah, let's try the theremin. See if I can't kick some ass on it, and hope it doesn't make me shit.
So here you go.
Oh, I see. That's so ridiculous. I was at the DMV. And I was in line forever. That is a lot of fun. Oh my god.
I think we're going to end the podcast on that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Eugene. As the closing music is happening, you can play along.
With some
noise,
okay? Yeah, let me.
We'd like to thank everybody for listening to podcast episode number 10. This is Michael Hurst.
And Rick Moody.
Thank you to Eugene Merman.
And Eugene Merman.
Tara Goodrich, the Ask the Shrink specialist for this episode.
And we'll see you back soon, like in the next 6 months, for episode 11.
1859.